you're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Was Here Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Nina Cherry, Raw Like Sushi. On the line, I have Rob.
Hey, buddy.
Ben.
So don't get fresh with me.
Solange.
Got a gold tooth smile.
And Kyle.
Well, hi.
Raw Like Sushi is the debut studio album by Swedish musician Nina Cherry, released on the 5th of June, 1989 by Virgin Records. The producer was Johnny Dollar, Cameron McBay, Mark Saunders, Tim Semenin, and the genre is hip-hop and pop. And I'm going to read from AllMusic Review, Andy Kelman. Nina Cherry's actions throughout the early mid-80s indicated boundless creative energy and an instinct to mix it up. She wasn't yet out of her teens by the time she had performed and or recorded with stepfather Don Cherry and younger maverick Rip, Rig, and Panic, The Slits, and Vivian Goldman, and had spun early rap records on pirate radio. Once a personal manifesto and celebration and critique of city street peacocking, Buffalo Stance entered the UK chart in December 1988 and went supernova on a worldwide scale early the following year. The full scope of Cherry's vision was shown almost smack in the middle of 1989 with Raw Like Sushi, with songwriting partner and fellow arranger-producer Cameron Boogie Bear McVay at her side. Cherry, in sly knowing fashion, conducts a combined gender studies and sociology course, doubling as a cosmopolitan pop triumph. Switching with masterful ease between assured singing and rapping, Cherry covers materials ranging from the consequences of lust to the devaluation of children. More often, she examines from multiple perspectives the way in which men and women exploit one another, softening each blow with either a degree of benevolence or what you gonna do about it humor. Not easily classifiable as a whole, Raw Like Sushi is one of the most soulful and hip-hop albums considered neither R&B nor rap. All right, what do we think of Nina Cherry, Raw Like Sushi?
It's great.
This is a party. Yeah.
This album totally rules.
This is a party.
Yeah, it's such a weird one too. I got into it and I was like, I don't know if I like this. I kind of like it. It's killing places. And then she like busts into a rap and then she singing over her raps. And I was like,
it's
all over the place for me.
Right, really, there with you, Birch.
It really is. Like, I first heard of her because I got really into Jamie Oliver in my mid-20s.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I own like multiple Jamie Oliver cookbooks. I'm not going to lie. And I use them a lot. Please don't. I will not elaborate. But his music taste is amazing. And I heard Buffalo Stance on his 15 minutes or less show. And I was like, this song, I got to know everything. I saw that she was in Rip, Rig, and Panic. And so I immediately went to go watch the Young Ones episode that she's in, except she's not. It's their other singer that she shared the singing duties with. So I was like very disappointed to find that out. But I fell in love with this album. It's so cool. It was so cool. So sorry, everybody. Sorry, Jamie Oliver did that.
Yeah, this one too. I was surprised. She was also in The Slits. She was doing like backup singing and singing. And it felt sort of like the Madonna effect where it's like she was doing the club, she was around like everybody at, you know, that was coming up, and it was only a matter of time before, you know, her personality like came out in a music form, some music form.
Yeah, I mean, she had the luxury of, you know, being a rich kid with a very influential stepfather. Like her pedigree is fucking insane. where she came from and like the influences that she's drawing from. I mean, to the point where like she's allowed to go to a show in like the late 70s, early 80s, like for the Slits when she's 14 or 15. And then she's able to drop out of her actual high school and go live in a squat because, I mean, she's basically this is what Jarvis Cocker was warning us about when common people.
Tourist.
I mean, maybe she lived it, sure, but like, you know, there were no roaches climbing up the walls and she could call her dad. Exactly. Yeah. But no, I mean, like she's fucking great, man. Like her and her writing partner, like what they came up with on this record, like is 100% of its time, as well as standing really far away from its contemporaries. It's fucking weird. And it's also weird that she's Swedish, but I don't understand what's happening. I don't understand why she sounds like she's like straight up on a stoop in the Bronx, but like she's definitely not there. Like what she is singing about is, it's so much different than what I like, just the New York experience of like a single mother, you know?
Like, yeah. I'll give a little background on her. Yeah. Her nomadic life, as people would call it. Sure. She was in Sweden, 15, visited West Africa with her birth father, and then after spending time in New York with the punk band The Slits, moved to London. So, you know, kind of a lot of different places, all for, you know, by the time she was like 20.
Yeah, this is interesting because like the first track, I figured this would be an artist kind of like Debbie Deb or Tina Marie, which are, you know, they have a lot of singles I really like. This album's also like, there's a lot of styles, but it's also extremely of its time, like extremely like 1989 to 91.
Yes.
Every song sounds like it could come off like the Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze soundtrack. Like,
I wrote multiple times, I've heard this song in so, not this specific song, but it's like, I've heard this song on every old school station I've listened to across the country. Like, I know this song, but not this specific version of it.
Every time she would break out into a rap, it would remind me of like MC Scat Cat or something. Just like, it's just like you were saying, it's so time stamped of that year, that era, that couple years. It's almost partly because of that I'm not able, I haven't been able to get fully into it as much. So Buffalo Stance is such a banger. I like other songs on it too, but I don't know, every time I put it on, it just like, it starts out with her, she introduces the hi-hat, which I think is really goofy. then as soon as like I start grooving to it, she breaks into like what it now sounds to me like a really goofy rap. But I'm sure in 1989 was bleeding
totally
edge.
Fresh. Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, she opened up some like Peter and the Wolf kind of like
top that.
I mean, I was going to say it. My Bitch has my personal favorite supporting character in any hip hop song, which is a goofy male voice that wasn't there in any of the other songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read a pretty good summary of the style, and it says Cherry remains one of the most disorienting, eclectic of artists. On her debut album, most of the tracks are catchy yet confusingly dense, throwing us off. Their mood changes and far-flung references. Her voice switches nationalities within a single breath. She can come across as a sage or a brat, sophisticated or cackling malicious. Her tough persona implies a straightforward approach on her craft, but the music presents is harder to decipher. So it's like she's switching personas halfway through, and it's wild.
It's like she's throwing stuff at a wall, but it's like all good stuff.
some of the tracks that are more like straightforward pop oriented, like say Heart. They remind me a bit of like when in 1989, I was mostly listening to Paula Abdul and MC Hammer. And it reminds me a lot of like Paula Abdul stuff, which I can totally get into. And I think that, see, I still look back on both of those artists fondly because I liked them in 1989. I'm wondering if I got into this album at that same time as that kid that really was into music that sounded like this, if now as like a 40-year-old, it would have that I liked it when I was a kid. I kind of still like it now for me.
You know, I think it might. And I think that a lot of the albums in this book that we're covering are driven directly by nostalgia. So that's not unheard of. I do think that I'm excited that we got to hear this because it again, you know, her contemporaries that are running around like simultaneously, like this is such a divergent styling of the same thing. Like one of the things that I was thinking, like this really does remind me of Sheila E.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah. I guess I don't know what to do with that.
Rob, I'm just a little confused. You think a lot of these selections are based on nostalgia?
100%. Yes.
You think this is based on nostalgia?
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think that this hit really hard in the UK. I think Robert Demery probably, he's gotten rid of the shoulder pads now, but he's putting on his really baggy stuff because the Manchester scene's about to explode. And, you know, he's one of those baggy boys now, and he's experimenting with party drugs. So yes, I 100%.
Okay, you're more familiar with the author.
Like when Robert Demery was alive in 1954 as of it. No kidding. I don't know how old he is. I think Rob, you're hitting on a really good point with that. And I haven't really considered that as like a global response, like a macro response to the selections in the book. I'm only agreeing with it in this moment because this album is oppressively nostalgic for me, which I know I'm younger than you guys, but like my parents listened to so much MTV and so much radio like when I was a kid that I heard stuff like this because like she to me kind of reminds me of Salt and Peppa, but much more cutting edge in a way. No disrespect to Salt and Peppa because they're super talented. But this album is like I described it as this album is like an old friend. You know, it's like a person you haven't seen in a while and you're kind of excited like, oh, look who it is. And you kind of relive the old times. And I think especially for this album and definitely, Rob, I agree with you on the overall selection of the book, to be honest.
It did very well, though. That is, yeah, even though you're saying it's nostalgic, it did 100,000 copies in its first week, and it peaked number 3 on the UK singles charts, US Billboard Hot 100, and number 1 in Sweden and the Netherlands. So
That's notable.
It's notable, but nostalgia doesn't like negate actual sales.
Yeah, I'm sure that you know that's going to seep into everything. Look at my fucking den, but like,
just look at it. That's your den. I thought that was your office.
Yes, and
yeah, it's my office.
I thought it was the guest room.
But like, I mean, if you were charting the evolution of this genre and these genres of music, this is a pretty important intersection. I'd say it's. I argue with a lot of these being necessary records, but I'd say, I'd throw it in there. 1001 Records. Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I went back and actually, Rob, you brought up a good point about Sheila E. And I was like, maybe Sheila E. should be over this record. And I went back and listened to the Sheila E. records. And I was like, you know what? I even though I think I like those records better, I think that Nina Cherry is presenting something outside doing the singing with occasional rapping, and then the production is just a bit more dense. It has a little bit different flair. It doesn't go straight dense. Prince. It doesn't go straight Madonna. Although on which song was it? There's one song I was like, this is a Prince song. There's the Risque Locomotive. I was like, this is a Prince song. And she admitted
he snuck in there at night.
Yeah. She was like, oh, Prince was on top of my mind when I was like doing that song, and I was like, okay, confirmed.
On top of my mind.
Yeah.
Nina Cherry's brother is Eagle Eye Cherry.
That's right. Save Tonight, Fight the Break of Dawn, Come Tomorrow, Tomorrow I'll Be Gone.
You guys are fucking with us.
No.
You guys planned this bit before I joined.
And he's got an album credit too.
I refuse to believe that.
On track seven on Heart, he's the one who goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, Nina Cherry."
Oh my God.
You and me and a bottle of wine. Kyle, I too had the same incredulous questioning everything, questioning myself when I found out that fucking Save Tonight and Buffalo Stance are related.
Earlier this week, I read that Nina Cherry was Eagle Eye Cherry's brother, and I realized I hadn't thought about Eagle Eye Cherry in probably about 25 years. And I was trying to picture, like, okay, so what does Eagle Eye Cherry look like? But I could only picture Eric Andre.
I mean, honestly, like, kind of not too far off.
And like, then I looked up a picture of Eagle Eye Cherry, and I'm like, oh, okay, I get why my brain kind of shortened its memory by condensing those two images into the same dude.
Eric Andre is my placeholder for a lot of celebrities. I thought I saw Maz Jobrani on Strange New Worlds today, and I couldn't picture him. All I could picture was Eric Andre as well. I was like,
that's interesting. Right. That's interesting. Right. I wonder if anyone else experiences this.
I don't know. Write us. Tell us.
Yeah.
When bring up the Top of the Pops, 1988, Nina Cherry sported a copper satin jacket, matching bra top, clunky medallion, miniskirt, and trainers, 7 months pregnant. She outraged conservative British audience, but the performance was groundbreaking, stoking a conversation about pop stardom and pregnancy, challenging social expectation. Yeah, before
MIA. Yeah, beat MIA to the punch by about 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm totally looking up a picture of this.
My favorite, though. Oh, you can see the video, Top of the Pops. The funniest part was not everyone was impressed. One critic asked Cherry if it was safe to perform when she was 7 months pregnant. And she said, yes, of course. It's not an illness.
And props to Nina. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's sick as hell.
Yeah, she's rocking it, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She looks cool. Other props you should give. I don't know if you guys like a little band called Massive Attack.
Oh, absolutely. But she,
yeah, mm-hmm. of course.
She convinced them. Well, she was one of the people that convinced them to sign with a major record label to give us their artistry, which I'm very appreciative of.
Yeah.
You know, she's got her finger on the pulse. I know mm-hmm. that she, you know, from different means than a lot of people. And I think part of that is indicative of in like the music and especially like how she kind of chameleonizes herself in a lot of ways. It doesn't mean she's not talented and doesn't have a good eye for her. It doesn't mean she doesn't have a good eye because she has a great eye, I think.
Yep.
I hope she's that my words didn't come off as that. I mean, sometimes you get like an Elon Musk, sometimes you get a Batman. So she's on her Batman. Terrible. Okay. Yeah.
Guess what?
Let's rewind that.
Are you reading from the Kreisgau review?
Oh God! Oh no, I have it in front of me.
I get what you're saying though. It's like she is making the most of her opportunities.
Hell yeah!
How about that?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah. I didn't know about her father was her stepfather was Don Cherry, who's a you know, jazz legend, comparable to Ornette Coleman, who we were just talking about in a couple episodes ago.
Maybe that's why they threw this one in here. That way we have another Ornette Coleman. Yeah. Like,
you're just tangent. Tangent.
Sorry.
No, but I do like it. And I think the production is quite good. There is a little bit of cheese or what would you say? Nowadays, I look at it as campy, and I'm sure it was then, you know.
It is a little campy. It's, well, I mean, even the, you know, I think I brought this up on Malcolm McLaren for the first one, Duck Rock, because I brought up like, oh shit, this is sampled in Buffalo Stance. The campiness of this album and knowing that she's kind of like doing a callback to Duck Rock by Malcolm McLaren definitely gives it that campy. Oh, it's like a schoolyard almost, if you think about it. Like, whereas his is a underground radio station, hers just feels like a playground, like mocking people on the playground.
Yeah.
Especially, what is it? Kisses on the Wind, because that Spanish. I don't know if anybody on this pod speaks Spanish, but that intro is goofy as hell if you know what she's saying. It's like,
What's she saying?
Oh, you guys want to know? Oh, she just says like, she says like, hey, my friend. Yeah, this is my friend. It's me. And this is how I talk. I talk like this. And she says it like over and over again. Like, it's almost, not to be a dick, but it kind of reminds me of Stevie in Inner Visions when he's like, hey, Chevre, I speak very, very good Spanish because I've been to Urakia.
I thought it was really strange though, you know, the first couple songs you're bopping along, you're getting there, and then all of a sudden it goes to like the next generation.
Oh yeah.
And it goes to, you know, talking about selling babies and all sorts of like,
it's 1989, man.
Yeah.
I liked the next generation. I thought it I thought that it was a lot of fun because it had a fucking saxophone and I love that shit. But Love Ghetto and Heart for me were like that. That was my like dip. Like, this is fine dip.
I like both of those tracks.
I like the Depeche Mode synth thing during Love Ghetto. I like that a lot. But I mean, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just like,
Yeah. A lot of people said that once the next generation is over, it has this. It moves towards what she'll be doing in the future. It has like a little, and she has said that it's almost. It's not an exact break there, but it is Love Ghetto into Heart into Funny Lady. You know, it does kind of like come down a little bit away from the more upbeat, goofy, fun pop stuff.
I think that, and my stars on my page would show me, I hadn't even noticed. I think I like side two of this album a bit better than side one.
Mm. Okay.
But I really like Buffalo Stance.
Yeah.
Yeah. That song. That, I used to, I would
super
put the song
crunchy in. Synth on that song. Just a
karaoke tracks, they don't get it right. Cause like I sing that song for karaoke, and that is my number one pet peeve. A karaoke song can't get a fucking synth part right. Yeah. I'm like, this is a karaoke track. This is MIDI. How fucking hard is it? And it never gets it right. Never.
That's disappointing. Yeah.
I know. It seems
like the right person would relish that job in the studio of finding the right synth sound for all your favorite hits.
That guy already plays in Weird Al.
whoever he beat out for that job, maybe should be recording the synth tracks on karaoke.
This is one of my, because I also love Buffalo Stance a lot. This is one of my road trip albums I'll listen to and I'm getting kind of like tired. I'm like, you know, I'll kind of cycle between like, if I like have listened to a lot of Depeche Mode, I'll be like, okay, I need to put something like on that'll hype me up. And I'll,
yeah,
Buffalo Stance does it every fucking time.
I can see that. Like, yeah, totally. That's a total rally song.
Oh, completely. Absolutely. And then it gets me into the rest of the album. And then I'm like, oh, great. Now I can like do this.
It's always bad out of hell for me nowadays.
Just on repeat for like what?
The entire record, if I'm feeling sleepy, it gets me hype.
And you just think about how poor the production is.
Yes, 100%.
And that your anger keeps you awake.
Oh. But he's a studio imp.
I know, he is. He did a great job. Todd Rundgren did a great job. Let's get back to this. You guys want to know what Kreisgau thought? All right.
So lonely. He needs a girlfriend or boyfriend.
Robert Kreisgau, daughter of a Swedish artist and an African percussionist, stepdaughter of Don Cherry in the London scene. She's a 24-year-old bohemian, a socially responsible hedonist, a sexy two-time mom, and a relief from bimbo, macho, and exchangeable female dance phenoms. Slogan, I know where I'm going, and I know where I'm coming from. Alternative, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it all. Do it right. And oh yeah, I came already. The music doesn't quite rock one's house, but it's far more beat wise than the Brit norm. And she can sing talk that song / rap. Bohos who sell, the most interesting kind. A-.
Okay. I like that review. That's a good review.
Pretty good. Okay. Yeah. Only a little sexist.
I was like wondering where that was going.
He was only a little bit mean for no reason. And you know, that's still not okay, Robert, but.
But yeah, I mean, again, her pedigree aside, I mean, just because she has access to things that other people don't, doesn't mean that she would have come up with anything good. And she, in fact, had access to things that most people don't and came up with something great. So
mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
I applaud.
Oh, yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Completely agree. She
secretes talent, coolness. Yeah, this is a great record.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And I have no nostalgia for it, and I still liked it.
Yeah, none whatsoever. And I was a big old fan of what I heard.
Why is that? Because you guys are older than me. Why is that? Did you just not listen to this kind of stuff? Like, at
well,
that
that's
age,
the thing. Or? No, I mean, I did. Like I said, Debbie Deb, Tina Marie, you know, Yod Kid K, Technotronic. Yeah. I remember all that stuff.
Oh, sorry. How long were you in California before you came over this ways?
I was 11.
Okay. I don't know if that helps at all because I.
I don't think Buffalo Stance made it to Warsaw, Indiana.
Yeah, I don't think it made it to Indiana.
We had Paula Abdul and MC Hammer, mostly.
Yeah, yeah. I had Paula Abdul tapes.
I think it might be a regional thing is what I'm getting at.
Maybe. I would rush to listen to it again.
Maybe. We did have Live 105 and K-Rock in K-Rock in Los Angeles. And Live
well, K-Rock is fucking legendary. I mean, come on. So, I know what the fuck K-Rock is.
They had K-Rock when I
only radio station that ever played Oingo Boingo. Yeah, I'm aware of K-Rock.
I didn't think you guys wouldn't know what that is or anyone else. I'm just dunking on myself.
Yeah, it was on the Virgin label, so it's not like a, you know, obscure label that wouldn't have got a lot of radio play or something. So I don't know exactly why it didn't hit.
I think I 100% think it's regional.
Yeah.
And yeah,
could be that album title.
Could be.
Raw Like Sushi. Mm.
Yeah.
I prefer City Street Peacocking. That sounded pretty cool.
Yeah, did you guys read about what Buffalo Stance is?
Yes.
No, tell me, because I
mean, what do you think it is?
I thought it would probably be like a B-boy stance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I figured as much.
I thought it was going to be like a power, probably a B-boy stance, but I'm going to go with like power stance. Like, or is that a B-boy dance?
That's kind of a B-boy stance.
I think you're voguing, actually.
You're yeah, voguing yeah. a little bit.
It's a little
vogue. You're definitely voguing.
Yeah, okay, well, you know what? I'm not from the streets or hip.
I imagined like a B-boy stance, but like wearing the Duck Rock Buffalo Girls outfits.
Okay. Cherry told the New York Times, it's an attitude you have to have in order to get by. It's not about fashion, but about survival in inner cities and elsewhere.
Oh, big dick energy. I see, Nina.
And it's also a reference to Buffalo, a group of photographers, model, musicians, hair, makeup artists, etc., formed by fashion stylist Ray Petrie, of which Cherry was, you know, member of. So it was like a collective of, you know, artists.
Oh, that explains the Buffalo Stance chain of vintage stores and where they got their name from. Because I always assumed it was from the song, and I guess it's from the concept.
Yeah.
It could be from the song.
The philosophy.
The way of life.
Ooh. Yes.
Man, the I like Heart. This is a great song.
Heart's
yeah. song is
dope.
A fun song, yeah.
Heart's
dope.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I rewound this one a few times.
I'm trying to listen to this with like my 1989 ears right now, and 1989 me is like in almost every track. So I think that I can't hold the fact that it's kind of time stamped against it, you know, when I'm deciding. Dude.
If this song was between MC Hammer and Partners in Crime on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles soundtrack, you'd be bopping to it.
Oh no, man.
Heart's probably my second favorite song on the record after Buffalo Stance.
This is 100% like fourth grade skating rink, like rowdy shit. So, sorry to interrupt you here, guys. Who wrote the song "If I Was Your Woman, the Things I'd Do to You"? But I'm not.
It's Janet
so
Jackson.
Is that
yes,
Janet Jackson?
Janet.
Yeah, that fucking sounds exactly like Heart. Yes. All right, thank you. Is that a,
yeah, I mean, that's, well, I would say 93, maybe, if.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's still pretty close. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I feel like there's, you can draw a line from this record to a lot of other records that were,
yeah,
huge.
Definitely.
I think it's strange because I identify more with the songs that have singing and don't break into the sort of like childish, like, what would you say, like in jokes and like rapping. But at the same time, I wouldn't want that to go away, if that makes mm-mm. sense, because yeah. it wouldn't be as interesting. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. It's strange because my brain somehow thinks that it would be better, or I would like it more, but I know I wouldn't.
Backing like, tracks are never good.
Yeah.
No offense, yeah. guys. Sorry, Kyle.
No, I feel like there is like some self-winking and self, I don't want to say self-deprecation, but I feel like there's definitely, it's intentional to not take itself too seriously.
Sure, yeah.
Like a character.
Unless it appears, you know, ridiculous, because this is still, it's of its time, but it's still, you know, pretty blazing new ground for 1989.
No, I think you're getting to something, because it's almost like she's playing a caricature of herself. I said a character mm-hmm. just a minute ago, but it's almost like a caricature in a way. Like she's, I thought it was interesting, Rob, that you said that she sounds like she's from Queens, which to me, she, and I say this as someone who's watched like a shitload of British TV and movies, she sounds like very quintessentially like an English rapper to me. Like English rappers have or British rappers, like a very specific like tone to their voices when they're rapping. That's to me very different than like how an American person raps. Huh. When you take away like that element, you look at like how she's emulating like urban culture of, we could say the United Kingdom, but it could be that she's also emulating it from New York. It's like she's putting it on like this hyper blast, like this really exaggerated kind of way that's mainstream, you know? I mean, I'm sure that even though this blew up, there's probably other artists that are a lot more organic than her that I think would yeah. be like just way too much for like, you know, the regular mom and dad, whatever audience that's yeah. listening.
Yeah, just got to have it's got a big personality, huge yeah. personality, this album. It's almost, it might be the selling point too, you know, like a Madonna or a Prince, is that her personality. I mean, obviously from the cover is amazing too. It's got like a
yeah.
very cool yeah. type in the middle. She's got all the gold bracelets, you know.
Looks tough as shit.
Looks yeah. tough. Well, yeah.
Is that a Buffalo stance?
Yeah, you yes. could say that.
I would say so, which I don't know if you guys saw the video for Buffalo Stance, because as I'm also talking about this album, I'm thinking about the video for Buffalo Stance, which I think is a perfect companion to like what this album is supposed to embody, because it's very fast paced. It's very frenetic and it's really tongue in cheek. And if you've seen the video, when she talks about the guy that has to have style and get a gold tooth smile, it's like she picks like this really dweeby looking guy who's like mm-hmm. totally dresses the part. He's from Central Casting and he's just got this massive like gold like front tooth. And just the visuals that she gives with it, it really works well with the video.
It makes me think of another 1989 rap album from the Bronx, which was D.D. King.
I think I'm a little I'm having a little Queen Latifah hangover on this album too, where I'm like where I listen to the raps and I'm like, that's not even close, like not even close to the Queen, or
yeah,
you know but so I think I was caught off guard when she was rapping and I was like, man, we just had Queen Latifah in the book.
Not everyone is as good as Queen. Yeah, 19 year old.
Not a contest.
I know.
But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I still think the rap parts sound pretty goofy to my ears.
Yeah, they do.
Listening at this point in time, at this point in my life.
In the Casio tones and things.
They have to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the Casio tones.
They're a little clunky for me. All right. What do we think?
Yeah, total positive for me. Cool. Fucking love it.
Yeah, highly recommended.
Yeah, positive. It's It's nostalgic, it's contemporaneous, but it's not cloying, it's not overly, to me, it's, I know we said campy, to me, it's not over the top. It's very, to me, it's like, if you want to know what music in of this particular time sounded like, this would be the perfect thing to listen to. You know, what would you hear on like In Living Color? That's kind of what it makes me think of.
Yeah,
oh, definitely.
Watching In Living Color with my chosen family. That's what it makes me think of.
I can see Jennifer Lopez definitely fly girl dancing to this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Bike Short Central.
2022, if somebody fucking drove past you blasting this out of a car, you think they were the coolest motherfucker.
Completely. I would be like, what radio station's that?
I'd stick out my thumb.
Yeah.
In 2022, I think that I'm going to land on positive for this. And I think that 8-year-old me in 1989 would have really loved it. But I think that me in 2022, probably not going to listen to it that much moving forward, with the exception of a few tracks. But I can't not give it a positive. It's just good. Fun. It's a lot of fun.
I can't decide. I think I'm going to go neutral. I'm going to defy. It's really good. I did enjoy listening to it, but it's one of those things I don't know.
You wouldn't slip one of these tracks on like it.
Oh, I definitely would.
You're hosting people, 2 a.m. Zach DePew's being weird. You got to calm him down.
This is not how you calm him down.
At no point could you see yourself recommending this to someone? Or is that my negative? I forget. I forgot my own rules.
Yeah, if you recommend, that's a positive for sure.
Okay.
If you're like, that's neutral. And if you say don't recommend, that's a negative. If I'm going to replay it too, that also bumps it up to a positive for me too. So I'm kind of like, if it came on the radio, totally fine. You know, I would love that, but I wouldn't turn the dial, but I wouldn't probably like turn it up. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what radio station this is. That's playing.
Yeah, that's a constantly playing.
Oh, I know which one it is. It's the Hopi Public Radio Station, because yeah, they do play. I have heard this song on there before.
It's those little kids across in New Albany.
They do that too.
I would recommend this album to someone who was looking for music to put on a playlist for their roller rink party. I would 100%. Absolutely, I would absolutely recommend Raw Like Sushi, Nina Cherry.
This is a good album for a person making a movie about 1989 and they need it to be very stylized. I would recommend this album.
Absolutely. All right. Next time we'll be talking about Baba Malal and Mansoor Sek, Jam Lee.